How is it going, everybody? Welcome back to Radio Laurier News at Noon. Sorry about last week. We didn't have episode. Had some technical errors, I guess. But yeah, we're back. We're back. It is Wednesday, March 9th that you'll be listening to this. And yeah, a lot of stuff is going on in the world, as I'm sure everybody knows. It's kind of impossible to not know. But yeah, we're going to try and walk you through some stuff. We have our sources. We have lots of little bits of information just to give you guys a glimpse of what's going on in the world. And yeah, welcome to the show.
Yeah. So first up, we can discuss how most of the COVID restrictions that we've been seeing since the start of the year are going to be lifted, with the provincial government looking to lift mask mandates as well by the end of March, I think, or March, April, around that time. So around the springtime, we should be seeing relaxation of the mask mandate. As you probably already know, the vaccine passport mandate is no longer in place. However, certain businesses may choose to use it if they feel so inclined, but it's not provincially mandated anymore. And then also capacity limits are off. So everywhere can have 100% capacity right now. I'm not sure if any of you guys had been to any of the clubs or been out this weekend, but it felt back to normal. I went out on Friday and everything felt like super normal again. I don't know. It was just nice to go to the club again and it wasn't like empty. Because previously when they had like 25% capacity or whatever, it was fine, but it's not like that OG experience where it's like people packed up, like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't feel know. Like how it used to be type of thing. So
yeah,
it's nice.
The vibes that were not,
yeah.
Right now it's almost back to normal. Like, it was great. So if anyone wants to go out and support like our local entertainment businesses in Waterloo, please feel free. You probably won't have to wait that long in the line. Yeah, and you don't need to book guest lists anymore. So that's great.
Wait, Rajni, what, just for everybody's sake, where did you go?
Oh, we went to Allure, which is like a new club by University Plaza. They opened last year, November.
How long is the lineup for that one?
Me and my friends got guest lists for it, but the lineup when we went for the non-guest list was almost non-existent. Like, you, like, five minutes wait.
Really? No way.
Yeah. Yeah, super short.
You go late or did you go like a regular time?
So for the guest list, you have to go before 11, because otherwise they will cancel your guest list and then there would have been no point. So yeah, we got there at like 10:45 or so.
Okay, cool. Everybody, yeah, go before 11, get guest list. I'm pretty sure guest list is almost always girls only at every
club. No, they allow guys on the guest list.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's
and it's also free, so.
Huh. Well, there you go. Everybody, check out Allure New Nightclub. And
yeah. Okay. So I also saw that, staying within Ontario, I guess, that the Doug Ford's government is trying to introduce like a bonus for the nurses, a 5K bonus. And people are calling this like an election tactic and saying that he doesn't really have any actual interest in helping them out. He's just trying to get reelected. So did you guys hear anything about that?
I did. Yeah, I actually found an article. I've made some notes on that. So I don't know if you want me to kind of, state some of the facts that I found on that. But yeah, so pretty much Doug Ford is, offering like Ontario nurses like a 5K retention bonus. There was an article that I found by the Star, and half of the 5K would be expected before June 2nd, the June 2nd election, and then half would be given afterwards. And like you said, it's like a tactic that's being called pay as you vote gimmick. And the money is, like, you know, intended to reward nurses for, you know, staying at the front lines during, like, COVID-19. And yeah. It's to, you know, encourage them to stay in that profession during, you know, the shortages that, you know, the healthcare system is kind of going through. Mm-hmm. And the money will go to nurses who, like, work in hospitals, nursing homes, retirement homes, mental health and addiction emergency services, and so on. And just as a side note as well, the government has previously given personal support workers in nursing homes about a $3 hourly bonus to stay in their job, you know, in the midst of the high turnover rates during COVID-19.
Yeah. So, do you know how much personal support workers would have made, like, as their base pay before this increase?
No,
tells me it's not that much.
Yeah, that's You know, I think if that was the case, then they would have, like, mentioned that. So mm-hmm. I think I would have to go out of my way to kind of see how much that would be overall to know how much a $3 bonus would be. So I think it's. I also agree with you. I don't. You know, I have a hunch that it's not. But I mean, at this point, it seems like they're trying to do whatever they can to kind of, like, you know.
So I actually just looked it up, and according to personalsupportworkerhq.com, mm-hmm. In Ontario, personal support workers can make between 13.46 per hour and 23.08 per hour. I guess it has increased to 15 per hour now due to the minimum wage increase, mm-hmm. but yeah. So if they work in facility-based care through employment and employment agencies, it would be 14 per hour. Mm-hmm. I think this is a bit out of date. So for home residential care, it would be 15 per hour. Independent, private, and long-term care homes or nursing homes would be 19 per hour. Mm-hmm. And then city-owned long-term care homes or nursing homes would be 22 per hour. And then hospitals would be 23 per hour. So it's, like, it's not terrible, but at the same time, it's, like, if you look at the amount of actual hard work that they have to do, definitely not enough compensation, I would say.
Yeah, I, like, I would also agree with that and think that it kind of falls under the whole thing of, like, it being kind of like a gimmick. And then especially to us, like, from an outsider perspective who are not, like, in the field, for example, that sounds like a lot, right? Like a 3-hour bonus, right? Or like a $3 bonus. Yeah, or like the 5K retention bonus, right? But I guess in the bigger picture,
it doesn't actually translate to that much.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I mean, imagine, and I think the mental health toll and the burnout from this type of job would be extremely intensive, especially because I think, okay, like for the nurses, obviously a nurse would make more than a personal support worker because you have to get, like, a degree for it and everything,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, special qualifications for nursing. But a personal support worker probably does almost as much as the nurse, and they probably do, like, most of the dirty work.
Yeah.
Like, no one else would really want to do. So if you can imagine, you're, like, cleaning blood, bodily fluids, and all of this, and you're not, like, you see people dying in front of you too, especially during a pandemic. Like, that trauma affects them just as much as the nurses does.
It's just,
like, both of those people need to be adequately compensated, and also allowed not just monetary compensation, but things like mental health supports and counseling, because the kind of stuff that they're seeing right now is not something that anyone should have to, like, think about when they go to work every day. Like, imagine going to work every day and knowing that you're going to see people pass away, and, like, knowing that you're going to have to see all this horrible stuff.
Yeah,
and then you still have to go because that's how you make your money, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then not only that, you're also kind of putting your life at risk, and then, you know, your other, you know, family members and whatnot. So it's like from different directions, right? Like, there's so many layers to it. So for sure. That, you know, having something like this is not enough of a compensation. And there definitely is a disparity between, you know, how they are treated or how they receive you know,
recognition
for their hard work and what they do for their jobs, and how they get paid for that and recognized, right? So for sure, I agree with that.
And I feel like the Ford government, if they wanted to avoid criticisms that this was just an election tactic, they should put some systems in place that like include health, include mental health benefits in the package for at least like government employed personal service workers.
For sure, for sure.
To also to have something in place that makes people more encouraged to join that field of work.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of people in that industry will be burning out at this point, and you can't just have a shortage, you know, and like a temporary $3 surge in the wages is not going to cause people to retain the job, you know. You want to make it like an inviting field for people to want to work in,
exactly,
if you're going to avoid having a shortage. So and at this point I don't think anyone would want to be like graduating from college or uni or their program or whatever and wanting to be like, yeah, I would love to be a nurse right now. Or exactly. I would love to be a person support worker right now.
It's like a bad reputation now kind of thing. So you know, it doesn't have to be that way, but you know, I don't think the government is really helping in that sense. So it's definitely, I definitely can see that not being something that a lot of people would decide to go into as a field.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
I could plug this in here as well. There was also, like, while we're on the topic of like Canada and you know, the Canadian government, there also, I don't know if you guys heard probably that this about the CRA, like, and CERB. So the CRA is asking residents to justify like if they, you know, were actually eligible to receive the funding or not, all across Canada. And so, you know, people who collected money from the CRA or the CERB, sorry, are probably going to expect a letter, you know, asking them to verify that they were actually eligible to receive the funding or not. And like, you know, as we know, like CERB came out like early in when the pandemic kicked in, and it was to provide, you know, financial support, and it was up to $2,000 for a 4-week period. To employed and self-employed Canadians who were directly affected by COVID-19. And so many people had applied for it, right? And so now the CRA is checking if those who received met the requirements. And, you know, those who decided not to have been eligible will be expected to pay the money back to the CRA, of course. And some sources indicate that the CRA will be more lenient towards ineligible receivers who, you know, maybe made a mistake when they were trying to apply, and they were not, you know, trying to wrongfully take advantage of the CERB. And so starting in 2022, they're saying that if you have a balance owing, the CRA may keep all of the portion, or, you know, if you have any other future payments of like tax refunds or GST, HST, credits or whatever, they might deduct it from that for the amount that needs to be repaid back.
I thought they would just deduct it from like if you had a tax return or something coming in, like a Trillium benefits, that kind of thing. GST benefits, they would just withhold those until your amount was paid back.
Which I think is
I guess that's
fair, right?
At the same time, I feel like I get that they need the money, but in a perfect world, I don't think they should be like so eager to take it back from people. Cause I I don't think people would have just taken it to, obviously there is people who take advantage of things. There will always be people who take advantage of things, but the vast majority of people like actually needed that money.
For sure. Cause vast majority of people were all on the same boat at the exact same time. And the circumstances changed for all of us in similar ways. Right. So, I mean,
I think it should have been, they should have been a bit more lenient with it. Like, I think this reclaiming thing, the fact that they're trying to take it back now, it just seems like bad taste to me, because I think a lot of people still haven't fully recovered
from
the economic tolls of the pandemic.
Employment is still a big thing, right? Like, figuring out like jobs and work and pays and stuff like that right now, right? Because COVID's not entirely over. It doesn't just, you know,
And I mean, but I personally okay, like I was employed as a TA in the first semester, like September semester.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up being laid off from being a TA because we had the vaccine mandate at school, so the class mm-hmm. sizes decreased, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that puts me in an awkward position because that was like a major source of income for me. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's me. And imagine, I'm sure that's not unique to me. You mm-hmm. know, like many other people would have experienced that too.
For sure.
And this is 2022, you know, like it's not mm-hmm. 2020 anymore. So, I mean, for you to hear that, like the money that you took because you thought it was being offered to help you is now going to be something that's like an expense for you right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I can't imagine how discouraging and like stressful that could be.
For right sure. Now. Yeah. It's just like, how is it that all of a sudden now it's like these mask mandates and mm-hmm. the vaccine proof of vaccine and everything like that is being lifted soon. How is it that all of a sudden everyone's just recovered financially or mentally or, exactly. or just, you know,
because everyone hasn't, just because the mandates are going away doesn't mean that everyone's like fine again.
Exactly. So I do think it's kind of like, it's like, you know, you're just scratching your head, like, why is the government doing this now? I don't know how that whole process is going to work out, but it would have been far much more nicer if they were, you know, more lenient with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are. but I mean, in cases where, like you said, like, obviously, when things like this happen, like, they're, that doesn't, like, eliminate that, you know, fraud or, like, something like yeah. that could happen, like for sure. Exactly. I just think that if there's like extreme lengths or levels of that that mm-hmm. are worth looking into, and you know, having those people compensate or you know, give back on that end, I think that's a fair judgment, I think. But then yeah. for the rest of the people who, which is the vast majority, I think it should just be,
it shouldn't should even be
yeah
given
yeah you know? Exactly
yeah. But I mean, like, I understand from an economic perspective, that's not realistic.
Yeah, yeah.
But from a human perspective, like a empathetic perspective, mm-hmm. I don't think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are pretty much the current updates for some of the major things happening in the province and the country.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's time to talk about Ukraine, the Ukraine crisis, and the Russian invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it actually very much ties into what we were, what you guys are just talking about with the financial recovery and whatnot, because this war
mm-hmm.
that is currently going on is going to drastically impact inflation and the price of oil. Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's already impacting gas. Yeah, it's like $2 a gallon for gas now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have some just notes about sort of what's going on, some like statistics and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just sort of fire them away. So this is as of yesterday. The source is The Guardian. So Ukraine, as of yesterday, I guess it must have gone up since then, has mm-hmm. suffered about $10 billion in damage to infrastructure.
Wow. According
to the minister, Oleksandr Kubrakov. So yeah, that's not good. And there's more than 1.7 million Ukrainians fleeing Russia's invasion and have crossed mm-hmm. into Central Europe.
Yeah.
The nation's refugee agency has said, so the biggest European refugee crisis since 1945.
Wow.
Yeah, quite crazy. And for those who are kind of wondering, because it's not really super clear in the news as to like who's quote unquote winning this war. No mm-hmm. one wins war. Let's make that clear. Nobody ever wins any war.
100%.
But as of right now, realistically, Ukraine is putting up an amazing fight to the point that Russia is kind of in a bit of a stalemate because mm-hmm. Essentially Russia's whole geopolitical strategic idea of how they're going to approach this was basically they assumed if they invaded within the first 3 to 5 days and were able to topple the government and make Ukraine surrender, then they're unequivocally the winners in this war. But they were not expecting such a valiant effort from the Ukrainian military and civilians fighting back. And because of this, as we all know, I think today is day 13 or 14 of the war, which is quite a long time considering the size of the Russian military.
Yeah.
So the source for this is Wendover Productions on YouTube. I highly recommend them. They're like a geopolitical channel. Everything is fact-checked. Everything is sourced. Basically, I got this information. It's basically talking about how Russia's logistics in this war have completely failed.
Yeah.
And so basically, the Russian military is heavily reliant on its railway network. That's how they got all the tanks from Moscow to the border. That's how they get the fuel, the ammunition is through the railways. And so the Ukrainians kind of knew this beforehand. So they actually destroyed the sort of connecting railway stations between Russia and Ukraine.
Wow, so yeah.
Once Russia came into Ukraine, they couldn't use the Ukrainian railway system.
Yeah.
Further come into the country.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what's happening is Russian tanks are running out of oil or fuel. Sorry.
Okay.
And the fuel trucks that supply the tanks are being targeted by civilians and military because they're unarmored.
Yeah.
Basically, there's just, you can see on any part of the internet, there's just pictures of just Russian tanks just abandoned all over the place.
Yeah.
They can't fuel them and they can't get the fuel there. So yeah, no, it's basically just a failed war of logistics on Russia's part. They kind of just assumed, oh yeah, we're a massive army compared to Ukraine. We should be able to take the capital in the first couple of days. Obviously, not even close to happening. So here we are.
Yeah, and I think there's another important point of nuance that I read recently is that the Russian soldiers are being told false information, essentially. Like, what they're being told is that there are Nazis or neo-Nazis in Ukraine who they're trying to push back. So that's what they're told is the motivation behind their invasion of Ukraine, is to control the Nazi problem, quote unquote, which is obviously not necessarily true. And the actions that they're taking are not helping anyone. They're just like targeting civilians at this point, which is
very
messed up.
If anyone reads into it, obviously there is a small fringe neo-Nazi population in Ukraine, as there are in every country. There is an extremist population, but this they have a political party, actually, but they're not popular. They're not
big enough of a threat to justify an invasion.
Exactly. They're a very fringe minority of Ukrainian population.
Yeah.
Putin,
I think that's like,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think that's just that's just an excuse that's typically,
it's just like propaganda.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's like the excuse or the reason needed, right, to kind of justify it, so that the vast majority of people from the outside listening in are like, yeah, okay, this this war makes sense, and this has happened so many other times.
And I mean, like, even Russians themselves don't agree with it. Like, there's protests in Russia against the war happening. So it's really just Putin fighting this war at this point. Like, he's trying to target, like, trying to do everything in this case.
Honestly. And so as I was saying about the logistic failure, Russia kind of knows they're in a really tough position. Because the longer the war plays out, the longer the sanctions have to kick in.
Yeah.
And so basically Russia's been meeting with the Ukrainian government, Zelensky, and they've been having talks, and then they had a talk yesterday. And the source is Reuters. So Russia has told Ukraine it is ready to halt military operations, quote, in a moment if Ukraine meets a list of conditions. And so these conditions are ceasing military action, changing their constitution to enshrine neutrality. So basically eliminating the possibility of joining NATO, mm-hmm. and acknowledging Crimea, Donetsk, and Luhansk as Russian territory / independent states.
Oh.
Those are the terms of conditions. And then Dmitry Peskov, he's a spokesman for the Kremlin, mm-hmm. said, quote, they should make amendments to the constitution according to which Ukraine would reject any aims to enter any bloc. And then this is also a quote, this is not us seizing Luhansk and Donetsk from Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Donetsk and Luhansk don't want to be part of Ukraine, but it doesn't mean that they should be destroyed as a result. And mm-hmm. then finish the quote, for the rest, Ukraine is an independent state that will live as it wants, but under conditions of neutrality.
And I see.
So yeah, it's not, I don't, and there's not much, the Ukrainian government's not really agreeing to these terms, obviously, because if they did, this conflict
yeah.
done, because they know that they can,
they're not trying to lose like free territories.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not even just the territories, because the territories are essentially not even under their control and haven't been for the last 8 years. Mm-hmm. It's more the fact of the neutrality, because they want to join NATO, they want to be aligned yeah. with the West. Yeah. And they know that if they're
supposed to be neutral by Russia, then they have no chance of like integrating more with the Western side of Europe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if they are quote unquote neutral, mm-hmm. they're basically just a proxy state for Russia. Yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah. it's really complicated. And one last thing that is very important from this morning. So the US has decided to ban Russian oil imports.
Oh.
And this could see the price of oil more than double to $300 a barrel by the end of the year.
Oh my God.
Yeah, experts are saying it's unlikely it will go that high, but it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And as of today, oil prices are the highest they've been since the 2008 financial crisis. So anyone who has a car, get a bike, ride the bus, because it's going to be a lot of money just to drive for the next couple years.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, interesting that you mentioned the oil, because I was reading an article from the New York Times talking about how China fits into this whole situation. So basically, Russia's economy revolves around energy exports, so like oil and natural gas and those type of things. And so they have an incentive to kind of create an international political instability, or like to wage kind of a war against another country, because, well, as you just mentioned, oil prices go up when the world is unstable. And like the last time we saw that was, I mean, the last time we saw them go this high was the 2008 financial crisis, which was obviously another period of extreme turmoil. So the thing is, like, typically China and Russia are allied against, I guess, the Western side, like the US and so on. So like what the article discussed was that the US, due to Trump's presidency, had kind of alienated a lot of their allies, because Donald Trump kind of promoted the America First policy. And obviously Brexit had a huge impact on creating chaos in the EU when Britain exited from it. Whereas in contrast, China has been strengthening economic ties with countries all over the world, like improving their trade relations and essentially growing their economy. So I think China's economy, it said, had increased 10 times, whereas Russia's was pretty much the same. Okay, sorry, that was the wrong way to say it. So China's economy was the same size as Russia's is today, 30 years ago. And right now it's 10 times as large as Russia's economy. So it's like China has really been trying to, yes, they're allied with Russia, but at the same time, they have greater world economic interests. And I think China is at this point trying to negotiate for a place, or trying to assert its place as like a world power. And allying itself with Russia is not a good way to go about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, they didn't anticipate this type of full-scale invasion. And so they're kind of trying to distance themselves away from Russia. So it's like, they don't want to solidify that kind of alliance with they don't want to kind of play into the stereotype that everyone places on them, that they're automatically going to side with Russia because they're automatically against America. But yeah. Like economically and politically, it doesn't make sense for China to side itself too closely with Russia, because that would kind of alienate the entirety of their trading base. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which is kind of an awkward position for them to be in. So right now, Russia is dependent, extremely dependent on China, because every other country has kind of sanctioned them. So that means that Xi Jinping has kind of a leverage against Putin if he were to realize that the war was kind of hurting China as well. So like, there's no need for them to really come out and condemn Russia as such. All they have to do is to just carefully decide how to trade and invest with Russia. And then if they feel that the war in Ukraine is gonna affect them negatively, they can always just also put like trade embargoes and bans on Russia.
Yeah, and yeah, Russia is really not in a great spot right now, but one piece of leverage that they do have is they have the largest nuclear arsenal in the world. Like, they have the most nuclear weapons of any country in the world. So yeah, we will see. This is very every day something new. Everything is changing constantly.
Yeah.
And the people who are suffering, obviously, are the civilians of Ukraine, the Russian soldiers who don't even understand what they're doing, and obviously the Ukrainian soldiers.
And they're not even treating the Russians, like the Russian side is not even treating their own soldiers properly. Like, they have food shortages.
Yeah.
Of everything. They're feeding them meals that expired in 2002.
Oh, wow. My God.
Which is, like, that's very messed up. Like, I military food is obviously not 5-star gourmet food, but seriously, expired food from 20 years ago.
Yeah,
I think that just says a lot, right? About
it's like a very stark contrast between how Putin is leading this and how Zelensky is leading it, because like Zelensky, as soon as the invasion happened, he was like on the ground with his troops, like he was people, like he was boosting morale, and he showed that he was willing to sacrifice himself, because he denied an emergency evacuation for himself and his family, and he was like, no, this is my country, I'm gonna stay here and fight for it. Whereas like, I'm not sure if you guys have seen the pictures of Putin at his long table where he's like at one end, all of his people are at the other end, and they're talking to microphones because they're so far away that he can't hear them. That really just shows like the type of morals that each leader is working with, because it's like, so, like, he's a man of the people, he wants the best for his people. Whereas Putin just wants the best for himself. And he doesn't care enough about the people he's sending out to die to give them proper food.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it just puts in perspective, right?
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think that would be all for our segment on Russia. In terms of other international news, we can discuss... did anyone else have any other international stories to discuss?
No, honestly, not really.
Okay.
The news is just so oversaturated with Russia, Ukraine. It's
hard
to even...
It kind of dominates.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, I guess kind of a positive-ish sign for things going back to normal in other places other than Canada. New York City public schools had their first day without mask requirements today. So that's a promising sign, I guess, to see. We can look to them to see how that kind of easing of that restriction will play out. However, slightly more concerning is that Florida is contradicting the CDC by recommending that healthy children should not get the vaccine, which is, I'm not sure why they would do that. Because that's how we've managed to get to this position in the first place.
Yeah.
But anyways, Florida be Florida-ing.
Oh, Florida.
But yeah, and then unfortunately, the actual death toll of COVID has been released so far, and it's more than 6 million people.
Wow. In the world?
Like, yeah, in the world. I can't imagine that. That is so much.
I don't know why. I thought it would be higher.
I feel like it's very hard to understand the actual number of 6 million people, you know?
Yeah.
It's such a huge number that it's like, it's too abstract to really understand the true impact of that. But I mean, I'm pretty sure all of us know someone who has had COVID or either have had COVID ourselves.
Yeah. You know?
And then like, if you think about it, because we know mostly younger people, like translate that to people who are older than us and they probably know someone who died from COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you can see how it gets to 6 million, but at the same time, it's hard to believe it was that many people.
I mean, there's a NBA player, Carl Anthony Towns, who lost eight family members to COVID.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So I guess it's crazy. Rest in peace to everybody.
Horrible. Yeah, and like continue to be grateful. I mean, for me personally, I've been lucky enough that no one in my family has died from COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you just have to continue to give thanks, guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, on that slightly somber note, I think we can wrap up our episode here. Thank you guys for tuning in again, and we'll see you next week. Have a good one. Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye.